Norton told me to beware of this carpet, that I could trip and fall. So if that happens, laugh with me, not at me. Ben, that was great. Thank you very much. If you've never had a chance to sit and worship with Ben, you're like the right guy for your microphone to go out on. I think it was last year at the men's retreat. We're sitting and he's totally on mic. There's 30 or 40 guys in a room and he's literally hurting my ears. You like have a voice box that just resonates, man. It's beautiful. Thank you very much. As Norton said, if you came in late, my name is Jason Malik. I'm one of the founding pastors of New Denver. And I guess Norton and Steve and Dan in the leadership maybe felt like I should take a couple of minutes and just talk a little bit about my story, our story, and I think our story as a community together. And so this is an opportunity for me to maybe share a little bit of history, to share some learnings about 6 years as a pastor in Denver. And also maybe charge or challenge us as a community and the leadership of our community to do what God has called us to do. So that's kind of what we'll do over the next couple of minutes. By way of history, my family and I moved here about 6 years ago, almost to the day. I was formerly on staff at a big church in Atlanta, North Atlanta, called North Point Community Church, which I think just this year became the largest church in America. It was a big church back then, but it was in the midst of a huge kind of acceleration period. And so Norton and his family, Stephen and his family, and me and my family were all on staff, or at least the boys were all on staff at North Point, and there was a stirring and itching inside each one of us to take what we had learned at North Point and to take it to a far less church, community or geography than Atlanta. Little did we know that we would be doing this together. I knew I wanted to kind of take what we learned out of Atlanta, and one day we found ourselves at a coffee shop, both Norton, Stephen, and I, really just kind of dreaming, praying, thinking together, and by the end of that conversation, we realized, you know what, we actually need to do this together. And so we committed to it. We were full on, decided we were going to quit our jobs and leave. We didn't know that 1 month after this, the stock market would crash. And if you know much about entrepreneurialism, you know, kind of as you launch out, money is a pretty important thing to get something cranked up, right? We were leaving our salaries, leaving our jobs, trying to come out to a place that we didn't really know. Of course, our family and friends, they thought, you guys are crazy. And they thought we were going to go begging back to North Point to get our jobs back. But perhaps out of naivete, maybe a little foolishness, we decided we needed to press forward. We needed to commit and do this thing together. And so Norton moved out shortly thereafter. Stephen and his family moved out. And we followed again about 6 years ago. It's been an amazing, amazing journey. Definitely a difficult one at times. In fact, when we had our first gathering, even before really opening the church, we just had information gatherings. Our first one was at Duffy Roll down kind of in Platte Park area, you may know it, Louisiana. We gathered and maybe 20 people came. It was more an information session. But out of that, maybe 10 or 15 folks said, we're in. We want to commit to this thing. And we thought, wow, this is kind of our core group. And a few months later, we decided we would launch what became kind of a small worship service. We would teach, we would pray, we would worship together. And our first one, we had probably 20 folks gather together. And we thought, you know, that's not bad. We'll continue to do this. And we were doing it monthly. The next month, we may have had like 22, 23. And we thought, no, the trend line's doing great. The third month, we got together and four showed up. Four. And you can imagine, we thought, oh my gosh, this is hard. This is really, really hard. And yet we pressed on and said, Lord has called us to do this. We're going to keep pressing forward. And here we are, some 6 or 7 years later. I'd like to share a few things I've learned along the way. And these are more kind of cultural learnings, because if you've ever started anything or done anything new, you kind of have to almost put yourself in the place of being a student. And in our case, a student of culture, a student of Denver culture, to learn what makes people tick. What do they like? What do we like? What do we enjoy? What do we not enjoy? How do we connect with God? And what are some things maybe that would help people connect in a deeper way? And so we've studied studied really, really hard culture. These are a couple of things that I've learned. And they're not definitive, as you'll see. You may disagree with some of them. But the first thing is this. Denver is an adult playground. I don't mean like in a salacious kind of weird way, but Denver is a wonderful place, right? The weather, the mountains, the people, the food, the culture, the laid-back atmosphere, even before pot was legalized. This is a very, very fun place. In fact, kind of the phrase, if somebody says to you, how you doing? Kind of our catchphrase is, I'm living the dream. Living the dream, right? Denver's an adult playground. Here's another kind of learning that I found. In fact, this is probably related to it. Because Denver is a little bit of an adult playground, it's really easy for us, and I put myself in this category, really easy for us to stay in a constant state of distraction. You know what I mean by that? Constant state of distraction, right? So we can go to work, and this is American culture, or maybe Western culture in general, but I think it's even more prevalent here in Denver. We go to work, we have social kind of outlets, friends that we connect with, we jump online and kind of get connected through media. And then we go to bed, and we wake up, and we do it all over again. On weekends, we head to the mountains and ski or fish or hike or mountain bike, whatever the thing is, right? And then we do it all over again. And we rarely have time to slow down and think and process and really be and rest together in silence. When's the last time you've actually had a silent moment? See, we can live in a constant state of distraction. And I think it's because we have this kind of facade of contentment, right? We're living the dream. And yet deep down below that, I think there's something more. In fact, I did a little research, and you may not believe this, but Denver is the eighth highest city for the suicide rate in the country. Eighth highest city. Wouldn't you think, gosh, man, if we're living the dream, if we got it all dialed in, everything at our fingertips, that wouldn't be the case. Colorado Springs, number two in the country. It's crazy to think about it. Of course, you look at the Pacific Northwest where it's rainy, that's where it's number one. But number eight in the country. I think that's because what sociologists call existential angst kind of sits below the surface of that facade of contentment. Because we can live in this constant state of distraction, there's this angst that says there's got to be more to life than this. The third thing, and this is where it starts to get a little personal, is we are, and I think particularly here in Denver I've found, we are commitment averse. We don't like to commit to anything. Right? Even great things like, there's a party coming up on Friday. You want to come? Yeah, maybe. Right? On Friday, I'll let you know if I'm going to come to that thing. You send out an invite and you kind of get the little trickle in early on, and then there's this huge delay because we don't like to commit, not to relationships, not to a job, not to a vocation, not to a place. We don't like to commit. Church, even that, right? I mean, if the singer, man, if Ben's mic goes out, I'm afraid I'm going to have to bug out of this place. We don't like to commit. Denver is a very commitment-averse community. You can imagine what that does to a church. The fourth, and this I think has both positive and negative implications, we are a very spiritual people. We're spiritual, but we're not religious. You've heard that phrase before, probably used it, and maybe even embody it. We are spiritual, but not religious. Denver, I think, is very much an example of this philosophy, of this lifestyle. What's interesting is, I sense, and maybe you have as well, over the past 6 years, I've seen a little bit of a change. In fact, maybe even a pretty significant change. When I first came to Denver, I was actually kind of proud to introduce myself as a pastor, not because a pastor is necessarily like the most reputable thing around, but people were genuinely intrigued. It was almost like I was telling them I was from Mars. You can almost see their head tilt. Like, you're a pastor, but you're not wearing like a collar. Don't you live in like the convent or the monastery or something like that? And like, I think I saw you drinking a beer. You're not allowed to do that. You're a pastor? I've never met anyone like it. People were genuinely, tell me more about that. That's really interesting. Today, I don't know that that's so true. In fact, just this week, a study came out from the Pew Forum. They do lots and lots of research on kind of society and culture, on all kinds of characteristics of culture. What they just released this past week was a study on religion, and they said this. I think we have this to put on the screen. They said, between 2007 and 2014, the number of Americans who identify as Christian dropped by nearly 8 percentage points, from 78% to 70.6%. They continue, the number of people who are religiously unaffiliated, either atheist, agnostic, or simply nothing in particular, they call it the nuns, has grown by more than 6 percentage points, from 16 to 22% in the same period. Now that may not seem like a huge number, 8% drop over 7 years, or 6% increase in the nuns, atheist, agnostic. And yet if we were talking to a social scientist, they would say this represents an epic shift in our culture. How we define reality, what our values are, what's most important to us. This represents an epic shift in our culture just in the past, 6 years? That's or 7 years. That's amazing. And I think we have experienced it. I've experienced that in Denver just in the past 6 years, that people are spiritual, but they're not necessarily religious. See, what this tells me is that even as Denverites, we pride ourselves on being spiritual. We're growing less and less tolerant of people who are committed to a certain religion, maybe especially Christianity. Now, I'm not giving kind of value judgments on any of these. These are just observations that I've made over the past 6 years of being a pastor. So here's kind of the application. Here's the net for all of us. And I'd like to pose these maybe as a challenge to us as a community. And I'll alliterate because I'm a pastor. The first is this. To the community, I want to invite you. In fact, I want to beg you to commit. I want to beg you to commit. See, I don't know about you, but in today's day and age, it's getting more and more difficult to commit to things. I think in America, we have fallen into a trap that somehow believes, it's a lie, I think, that somehow believes that I don't commit to anything that doesn't serve my purposes, right? How often did your parents or my parents work in their job? How long did they work in their job? My dad worked 22 years in one job, another decade or more in another. I've probably had more jobs than him in the past decade than he's had in his entire life. You know why? Because I feel like a job is there to satisfy me, to meet my needs. Same is true in relationships, right? If somebody's not meeting my needs, get a new person, right? Get a new husband, new wife. If my housing situation isn't quite working out, get a new one. My church isn't working out. Ben singing's a little off. Preacher guy doesn't quite get it. He preaches too long. It's not funny enough. Go to a new church. See, here's what I want to invite you to do. In fact, more than that, I want to challenge you to commit. If this is kind of a place where you're just visiting, that's okay. Commit somewhere else. But commit. Because in America, we are falling prey into a trap that says it's all about us. See, there are two problems with that. One is, at least as it relates to church, we might believe that there's some perfect church out there, a church that's going to satisfy all of our needs. But the reality is that's not true. In fact, it's not true about most of those categories, those circumstances. There may be a person out there that God has for you, but I can guarantee they're not going to perfectly meet every one of your needs. And if that's what we're looking for, we're going to be sorely, sorely disappointed. And the same is true for church. I invite you to commit. Here's another reason that this is maybe a flawed perception. It's because in a lot of ways, I believe or we believe that the church or a place of worship exists for us. I love this quote. William Temple, I think we can put this on screen. William Temple says this, "A church is the only organization that exists primarily for the benefit of non-members." Isn't that crazy? A friend of mine recently said something like this. He said, he's a pastor up in New England. He said, "I get really concerned when people in our church like what we're doing too much." I actually made him repeat it because I thought he had misstated it or I misunderstood it. So, J.R., say that once more. He said, "I get really concerned when the people in our church like what we do too much." You know what he's saying? He's saying, listen, the church isn't here to meet our needs. We come to be equipped to go and to be deployed into the world to serve the world. The gospel is challenging. It's countercultural. It's even upside down. Consumer culture tells us, get what we can, right? Meet our needs. And the church says, we are equipped to go and meet the world's needs. In fact, if you're a student of the Bible, you read things like this. We are to die to ourselves, to sacrifice, to embrace discomfort and disorientation. Those are hard words. They're words that require commitment. So here's the thing. If you and I, and I'll put myself in this category, even as a pastor, if you and I are looking for a church that satisfies our needs, I believe the leadership of this church would say, you know what? We're probably never going to do that. You need to go look elsewhere. Because the church is maybe the only organization on the planet that does not exist for its own purposes, its own members' needs. And here's the thing. Here's what I love about this. I don't think the gospel will ever be real to you or to me unless and until we're ready to commit and sacrifice. In fact, Paul the Apostle, he writes about this in the book of Colossians. I've read this passage a bunch of times, and I've actually never kind of deduced what I'm about to share with you. The passage goes like this. It's from Colossians chapter 3, verse 23. Paul says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. It'd be real easy for me to say to you, you know, that what Paul's talking about is commitment. Get in there and do it, right? In your work, in your relationships, in your church. Commit as working to the Lord. But if you rewind just one verse, check out what the predecessor is. Paul says, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. And do it not only when their eye, the master's, is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. See, in other words, Paul's making a point. He's not endorsing slavery. He was trying to come up with an illustration of the hardest circumstances he could think of. And he was saying there are people who are doing what God has called them to do despite some of the worst circumstances you can imagine. Did they pray for salvation from that? Perhaps. And yet Paul says, work at it. What you're doing with all your heart. Despite the hardships, despite the discomfort, despite the ways that maybe you don't think you're being served or comfortable or content, even in slavery, work at it with all your heart. And so to the community, I would say, please commit. Commit to what you're doing. Commit here at New Denver. I want to invite the leadership. And this goes for staff, goes for elders, for volunteers, the same. I want you to commit. Service in a church is really, really hard because we are a bunch of broken people, right? And in order to discover God and discover His purposes for us, oftentimes it requires us to expose ourselves, to serve, to get out of our comfort zone. So to the leadership, I would say commit. In fact, to the staff, I'm going to push it a little further. New Denver is in, I think, a beautiful time in its evolution. Church plants, if you don't know, when a church starts up, you have about 3 years, statistically speaking, to get over the hump. If you get out of 3 years, you may make it as a church. Most don't. Some statistics say 85% of church plants do not get out of the first 3 years. And then, statistically again, at 7 years, which is right where we are, there's another kind of identity crisis. There's an opportunity for the church to actually redefine what it is and who it is. And I would challenge the leadership, volunteer, elders, and staff. This is the opportunity to discover, rediscover your identity and commit to it. Go hard, run hard, and be about serving this community in Denver. See, years ago, I can think back when I was kind of envisioning the church that we would become. When I think God was inviting me to discover the church that we were. And so I hope that all of us leaders in the room would celebrate who God has given us, the community that's here, and run hard to serve that community. The second charge is this. To the community, I want to say connect. Again, I'll use that little pastoral alliteration, connect. Now, here's why I say this. It's really, really easy to show up and to go home on Sundays. It's really easy to show up and kind of be served, to worship, to learn, and maybe even to go and put that in practice. But the church is not a building. It's not a place. It's not a leader. The church is an organism. You know what it is? It's a community. It's a family. This group of people, you are the church. Not the chairs that we sit on, not the building that we meet in, not the microphones that allow us to be amplified. You are the church. If you are not connected to people outside of this gathering, I would say you're probably not a part of this church. And New Denver is only going to be as strong, it's only going to be as strong as you are committed to connecting with one another. The church, the koinonia, the fellowship, that's the Greek word for fellowship, is about family. Now, family's not pretty or perfect, right? Think of your own families. Mine's sitting right there. We're not pretty or perfect, but we're committed to one another. So I encourage you to connect. Be deeply committed to this family. Years ago at North Point, I think back to a small group that we were in. Meredith will laugh at this, but it wasn't a great small group. We didn't particularly kind of like the people that we met with. It kind of sounds weird to say that, but we didn't have that much in common. We lived in the same kind of proximity, and so we got together, you know, probably every other week, and we would study the Bible, we would pray, we'd eat, and you know, I think I can remember times we would drive home going, why are we doing this? I mean, we just don't have that much in common with these people. Why are we doing this? And I remember just a few months later, I think it was Abby who got sick on a Sunday night, really late. It was like 11 o'clock. We were both having to get up to go to school, go to work in the morning, get the kids to school. And she was sick. And Mayor says, I got to take her to the ER. In fact, we both have to take her to the ER. We got other kids in bed. You figure out, I'm going to gather our stuff. You figure out who's going to come over. 11 o'clock on a Sunday night. You figure out who's... Who did I call? Speed dial. People in my community group. My family. We didn't have that much in common. We probably didn't love each other that much. And yet the first people that I thought to call? My family. So no matter where you are, no matter how introverted you are, how busy you are, how much you don't need kind of a new group of friends, I beg you, connect. That's what makes New Denver. That's what makes church, whether it's here or elsewhere, that's what makes church what it's all about. Connect. I say the same to our leadership, because too often in leadership, you can think that you're connected, right? Because you're overseeing different volunteer teams or staff. You may be connected to other staff or leaders, but I would say, please don't take that for granted. Connect with one another. If I can give those who aren't in leadership maybe a little insight, pastoral work, church work, whether elders or pastor or otherwise in some staff role, is really, really hard. Really hard. And so if you can, if you think about it, I hope that you would do what you can to invest in your pastors, in your leadership. They can be really, really tired. In fact, statistics show that pastoral work, church work, is one of the highest burnout professions that we know of. It's really, really tough. And so when you're connecting, I pray that you would connect to the pastors as well. And pastors, please don't take it for granted. Leaders, don't take it for granted that just because you're around people that you're connected. Invite people in who can love on you and serve you. The third charge is this. This is kind of a lame C, but consider. Consider. Here's what I mean by that. In today's day and age, with things that are moving as fast as they are, and as prone as we are to be distracted, to move from thing to thing to thing, it's so rare that I, even as a pastor, even as somebody who's worked in church for quite some time in my life, it's so rare for us to take time to slow down and consider some of those really important questions in life. And to ask God, if you're a God follower, to ask God, Lord, what in the world do you have for me in my life and even today? Take time to consider. If you're a Bible reader, I pray that you would rededicate yourself to diving into God's Word. Even if you're not a Bible reader, I pray that you'd start that. to dive into reading through the Scriptures and considering, inviting God to speak through that. If we really believe that this is a book, a divine book, God will meet us when we open it. I pray that you would take time to consider. A.W. Tozer wrote this. He said, "The most important thing about a person is what comes to mind when they think about God." And I got to think that if there's even a sliver of truth to that, that you and I would take lots of time to consider important, eternal, deep things. I pray that you would take time to consider. I'll ask the leadership to do the same thing. Again, whether you're staff or elders, pastors, or even a volunteer, you may think that because you're reading a Bible story to a kid or you're leading a small group that you're kind of getting involved and you're considering what God has to do for you. You know, I'd say, please don't fall into that trap. Take time to consider. Just because you're studying to preach a sermon, preaching to myself, just because you're taking time to read through the Scriptures, doesn't mean you're actually considering what God has to do for you and with you and to you. So I'd say take time to consider. So as we think about committing and connecting and considering, one last little maybe word picture or illustration for you. New Denver is a place that I love so dearly. For one reason, because we have a group of people that are super honest, super humble about who they are and how they are pursuing God. This is somewhat illustrative. This is a bowl called a Japanese kintsugi bowl. Anybody ever heard of this? I just discovered this recently. Japanese kintsugi. It's a form of ceramic repair that actually attempts to make something that's broken look far more beautiful because of its brokenness. Here's how they say it. When we view our lives as sometimes broken or even shattered, we begin to understand that no matter the trauma, despair, hurt, fear, abuse, failure, addiction, disease, and even death, our scars are just a part of us. We must look at these breaks as a place for beauty to transpire, maybe even transcend. Each time we will see we are more beautiful for being broken. So no matter where you are tonight, I pray that you would commit. Commit either to New Denver or some other church community. Get deeply, deeply involved. I pray that you would connect with a group of like-minded folks who are broken and yet beautiful because of their brokenness. And I pray that you would take time, that you would consider God's plans for you, for the world, and how you can be a redeeming factor in it. So what's next for the Malleks? 6 years at New Denver. What an amazing time it has been. Norton may have mentioned this earlier, but I work for an organization called American Bible Society. You may not know, but those who are on staff at New Denver actually have jobs outside of the church. So in fact, most of us, it's the majority of our jobs. One of the clients that I've served over the past really 2 years is American Bible Society. Started off as a very small job, got to be a little bit bigger, and eventually they asked me to come on full time. So we've still been a part of this church, and yet I've been serving New Denver for about 18 months now. ABS is about 200 years old. In fact, 199 today, or yesterday. Next year, we'll celebrate our 200th anniversary, and we're in the midst of an enormous kind of re-engineering, rediscovery of who we are. You can imagine after 200 years, some need to do that. And yet, I'm part of a team that's been brought in to help them rediscover and kind of re-envision who we can be as a very old Bible society that literally distributed paper products for 200 years. And in a day and age where that's probably not as quite a big need as it was, we're rediscovering what that means. So it's a really amazing opportunity. The unfortunate thing is it required us to move to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And so in a month, my family and I are going to be heading west or east. And though it's very, very difficult for us to leave this community,